Hello, everybody. Welcome to Cinema Theology. I am your co-host, Hadid Cortez, and I'm joined by...
Josias Flores. And this is the crossroads of theology and movies. So we got something really exciting, continuing some of the previous episodes. What do we have going on, Dio?
All right, so today we're going to talk about the sequel trilogy of the Star Wars saga, which of course includes Episode 7, The Force Awakens, Episode 8, The Last Jedi, and Episode 9, The Rise of Skywalker, which just came out last year, that being 2019. So, if you want, I can give you a quick rundown of what each movie is about.
Yes, please, I want to hear it. Also, guys, right. I'm just like terrible at synopsis. So yes, Dido, take it away.
All right, so in Episode 7, The Force Awakens, we meet a brand new team of characters. I mean, mainly it's Poe Dameron, the fighter and fighter pilot for the Resistance, who is trying to get a map to Luke Skywalker. We have Rey, who is a girl that lives in the desert planet of Jakku and gets involved in this adventure. And we also have Finn, who is an ex-stormtrooper who rebels against the First Order, which takes the place of the Empire of the original Star Wars. And now he helps Rey and the Resistance, which is fighting against the First Order, to destroy what they call Starkiller Base, which is basically the Death Star, but just bigger. So the story is pretty much like Episode 4 in A New Hope. However, when we get to The Last Jedi, we meet again our characters, but now Rey, who is force sensitive, goes to train with Luke, but Luke isn't everything that he appears or he's built up to be. In the same time, Finn and Poe are trying to save the remaining parts of the Resistance from being obliterated by the First Order. And that's how the movie plays out, and it has a spectacular ending. And then in Episode 9, which is The Rise of Skywalker, a very controversial episode, how do I explain this? We go on a wild goose chase to find the home of Emperor Palpatine in order to finally, defeat evil, all the evil that there is in the galaxy, wow. I guess. So, Josias, what are your thoughts on the sequel trilogy of Star Wars?
So, I feel like this is just, you know, has been talked about to death. But I'm going to say this anyway because it is kind of frustrating to me. And I'm not even that serious of a Star Wars fan. The fact that this trilogy is not as coherent as the previous two, that to me, it's just kind of... It just feels like a missed opportunity, right? It's a little bit sad. It's a missed opportunity. You had something, Disney, you had an amazing thing that you could have run with. And it wasn't terrible, but it could have been a lot better. So I think Last Jedi, I've come to appreciate more. And I think that movie deserves a second watch and fresh eyes. Force Awakens, I think, was great fan service at the time and succeeded at that. You know, we hadn't seen Star Wars in a number of years. And so seeing Force Awakens, even though it's kind of like a repeat of Episode 4, it was still worth it. And then finally, Rise of Skywalker is just, I think, I don't know. It's just like, you're instead of landing the plane, you crash the plane. I mean, that's kind of how I feel about it.
Basically.
So, what do you think?
I really love Force Awakens when it came out. Now that I rewatched it, it kind of got a little bit blander for me, but I still like it. Last Jedi is a movie I've watched a couple of times, like many times, because I really love that movie. I think it's my second favorite in the entire saga of Star Wars. There are some parts that I don't like. I think if it wasn't for those mm-hmm. parts, particularly the casino planet, it would be my favorite Star Wars movie. And then Rise of Skywalker... it's entertaining. I will give it that. It's entertaining. And it's at the end, when I saw it for the first time, the end just didn't make me emotional, didn't get me excited, just made me laugh because of how ridiculous it was. So that's my experience with the sequel trilogy. But I really disliked the prequel trilogy, but we still got some good ideas out of that and some interesting themes and theology that was being presented. And so I think we have the same case here where even if we may not really like all of the movies, I think we can still get some interesting and valuable conversation out of it. What do you think?
Oh, definitely. I think especially the Star Wars movies are rooted in religious lore, among other things. So there's a lot to unpack. These movies are no exception. Granted, they have a different writer. So George Lucas did not write these. And so we kind of have a little bit of a differing perspective. I think The Last Jedi goes back to the Eastern religious roots a lot more than Force Awakens and The Rise of Skywalker. But nevertheless, we see traces of theological thought in all three of these movies. And I'm excited to unpack them.
All right, great. So what do you think we start with some of the themes that start in The Force Awakens?
Sure. So to me, and again, Dido, you're going to have to, I don't know, just vet this, see what you to do with it as you will. To me, The Force Awakens, again, right there in the name, Awakens, it's all about, all of a sudden, we're getting secret knowledge. And again, that's what the fans wanted. More knowledge about the Star Wars universe. We want to have more information, and the whole movie teases more information. From the map to Luke, right, with BB-8 at the beginning, with Rey, where does she come from? What's her role? How come she's like Force sensitive? All of a sudden she can do Jedi mind trick, no training, she picks up a lightsaber. You also have Finn wanting to try something new, there's secret knowledge there. You don't know what to make of Kylo Ren. So there's a lot of just, hey, there are new things, and also Luke is kind of in the picture. A lot of things you don't know, let's explore it. To me, a lot of secret knowledge things, and it just kind of resonated with kind of what Gnostics do, you know, and the new gospels, or the secret gospels, the gospel of Judas, and I think Thomas or whatever that came out recently. We've seen movies about that. Mm-hmm. And just like there's more information about the story of Jesus, for example. And just kind of hit me as very like Gnostic with this whole secret knowledge thing. But that was me. That's one of the themes. What about you? What do you pick up from this movie, or what do you think about that theme?
Well, actually, about that theme, I was thinking that it's a characteristic, I think, of J.J. Abrams' films, who actually he directed The Force Awakens and Rise of Skywalker. But one of the things that you'll notice in a lot of his movies that it's they call it mystery box storytelling, where the intrigue of the story, and you can see it in The Force Awakens, is that, oh, what is this about? Oh, what does this mean? Oh, what happened to this character? You know, there's kind of like these mystery boxes appearing all the time. It's like, oh, and that's where the intrigue is. So it may be part of that. You know, when I watched it again, I really found it just... I didn't find a lot of themes to talk about, except for one thing that I remember. Maz Kanata, this orange alien, says something very interesting. The dark side takes on many forms: the Sith, the Empire, the First Order. So this was the first time, I think, in Star Wars where they kind of hinted that the idea of the dark side, it does not belong to one single group or, you know, a faction. But in Force Awakens, they make the distinction that these are actually different groups, but they're all serving the same thing. And that's a theme that comes back later, especially in Rise of Skywalker. Mm-hmm. So that's what I found interesting in Force Awakens. One of my favorite characters, actually, my favorite character of this entire sequel trilogy is the secondary villain, which is Kylo Ren, which I think is such a very rich and very developed character. Even in the movies where I don't like him as much, I think he's just the best part, and that's in no small part to Adam Driver, who's just a terrific actor.
Oh yeah.
But he encompasses a very interesting story arc, because, you know, in terms of characters who do dark things, I think he just goes a little bit darker than we've seen other villains go in Star Wars movies. Because
I don't know, man, you got Anakin killing those kids in the Jedi Temple. That's pretty dark. That's pretty messed up.
That is true. But I just think that the conflict that you see with him throughout the entire sequel trilogy is just one of the highlights, and my favorite part of these movies as well.
Agreed. I think Kylo Ren gets the best character development in the trilogy, and probably the best part of the last movie, in my opinion. You were going to say something. I feel like I interrupted you.
No, not at all. Okay. So that's basically what I have from Force Awakens. But do you have something else?
Yeah, I have one more thing. But before I do, here's a parenthesis, because what's up with J.J. Abrams liking all these like maps? I feel like he was like a pirate in another life, because in Force Awakens you have to get this map to go to Luke Skywalker, and that's your salvation. And in the Rise of Skywalker, you have this map to the Sith. So in the first one you have a map to the Jedi, and the second one you have a map to the Sith. And you have to go through ridiculous means to find this stupid map. And then all of a sudden, oh, the map, I don't know. It's just kind of frustrating. He just likes maps and map quests. It's like, what in the world? There are other things you could do with your plot, sir. Anyway, parentheses exactly. Closed. Here's the other thing and the other theme that I saw. And it's the theme of free will. And I think this is present in Christianity and in, you know, when we look at the Hebrew God. Free will is such a big thing because God limits himself in the sense that he allows the beings that he has created to choose right or to do right or to do wrong for themselves. And we see this in The Force Awakens with the storyline of Finn, for example, right? He was, even though he was born and then kind of stolen as a child to work for the First Order, he was able to choose his own path and choose right and wrong. Even later in the movie, right, when he decides he's going to walk out on Rey. He's going to walk out on the Resistance. Mm-hmm. He's going to do his own thing. You have the same thing with Rey. She gets to choose kind of her own path. And we have this idea with Kylo Ren a little bit too, that he has the ability to choose his own path. He just kills his dad though and kind of seals his path, it seems like, in that movie. So it's just very interesting. You have this idea of free will for characters to choose the light or the dark. And that's very present in Christianity. God is... It's a gentleman, they say. He does not force himself on anyone. And we see that, I think, at Star Wars as well in this episode.
I hadn't thought of that before, that there's a choice for each one of these characters that at some point they have to make a life-changing choice. And I like that you brought that out. So, yeah. So, moving on. Last Jedi. Okay. The polarizing Last Jedi. I remember when I saw it. I saw it with my cousins. They actually hated it. I loved it, so did my sister. But this is apparently something that is actually very common in the Star Wars community, where episode 8 is this, like, how do you say this? It starts wars. Like, it's it very
starts,
polarizing.
It starts Star Wars. Okay.
Yes.
I'll see myself out.
So, yeah. Actually, as I said, I love Last Jedi. It's my second favorite Star Wars movie. And part of that is because there's a lot of things that are set up to resolve in a certain way, but then as the story plays out, you feel like Rian Johnson, the director of this movie, is actually saying, nope.
Yes.
This is what happened, which I love. It's like such unpredictable storytelling, and I was really enthralled every time the first time I saw it and every time since. But I also found this to be the richest movie in terms of themes. So there's a couple, but before, what are your thoughts on the themes in The Last Jedi?
So I also have the longest list of themes on The Last Jedi. So the first time I watched Last Jedi, I didn't know how to feel, honestly. I walked out of the theater like, I didn't hate it. It was pretty good. There was one thing that I didn't like that really frustrated me more than Canto Bight frustrated me, again, this casino planet, but also the fake outs. Like, there's so many fake outs in this movie. So, like, you think Leia's gonna die. Oh, wait, no, she's gonna marry Poppins her way back into the ship, right? And then with the Force. And then you're gonna think Finn is gonna die and sacrifice himself. Oh, wait, no, here you have Rose coming and saving his life. You have, right, when they go to meet Snoke, oh, Snoke is gonna kill Rey or gonna take it, whatever. Or all of a sudden now Kylo Ren is going to kill Rey. Nope, he's going to kill Snoke. So there's a lot of these fake outs. Oh, Luke comes. Oh, wow, Luke came. Oh, no, he's not there. He's actually somewhere else. Again, Rian Johnson loves to like subvert your expectations, and I love that. But I think by the end of the movie, I was just kind of tired of it. I was kind of like worn out. It's kind of like The Boy Who Cried Wolf. To like at the end of the movie, like I didn't have as much of a commitment to things. Granted, on the second viewing, I wasn't as keen. Third viewing, I actually really liked the movie. I was like, wow, I'm starting to see Rian Johnson's visions for this, and I appreciate it. But anyway, we're here to talk about theology.
I think you're right. But maybe that for you was a reason which bothered you. For me, I really like that. That it's like, I like when a story takes me to a place that I never expected to be. So Now let's talk about some of the themes that are in The Last Jedi. I found it really interesting here that for the first time in Star Wars that I can think of, the Jedi are referred to as a religion, and that's what Luke calls it, the Jedi religion. Mm-hmm. So I start to think about the aspects, you know, what is the dynamic of good and evil? Because before I saw this movie, I used to think of good and evil as Sith versus Jedi. But here, it's like in the same thing we saw it from Force Awakens. Now the Jedi are not the sole keepers of good. In fact, one of the things that Luke does in this movie is that he deconstructs the Jedi, especially in the prequel movies, because he says that in the time of the prequels, the Jedi were corrupt. They were blinded by their own hubris. Which mm-hmm. is something I think I mentioned last time we talked about the prequel movies.
Yes.
Well, basically, the Jedi are just people. They were corrupt. They let everybody down in the end. And then I start to see one of the biggest themes in this movie, which is that human beings will let you down if you put your faith in them. Mm-hmm. Because a big part in here is that the Resistance have putting so much faith in Luke Skywalker. And Rey has so much faith in Luke Skywalker because he's this, you know, this big war hero and this great teacher. But when she comes face to face with Luke Skywalker, what is he? He's just, you know, he's just depressed. He doesn't want to teach her. He has lost faith in the religion. So that's disappointing. But we also look back to see and how this whole thing started with Kylo Ren. It was in part because Luke says that he let him down because Kylo Ren has so much faith. He looked up to Luke. And there was that moment where Luke saw inside darkness stirring within Kylo Ren. And he almost killed him. And that's where Kylo Ren was basically his world shattered. And then it's when he turned completely to the dark side. So that was the downfall of Luke, that people had so much faith in him. And then in the end, he let them down. And I think he feels that same kind of disappointment with the Jedi religion as well.
And I think this is that's an important theme here that you bring up, Dilo, because in Christianity, and I'm sure you have friends like this too, we meet people that are like, hey, I see a lot of hypocrites who call themselves Christians. Or, you know, I looked up to this pastor, or I looked up to this teacher, or I looked up to my parent, and I said, you know, they were kind of like the model for my Christianity, and then they had a moral fall or something that revealed their true character, and it made me realize that it was kind of a lie, and I lost my faith in the process.
It is better to take refuge in the Lord than to trust in man, and that's what Psalms 118 says, that it is better to take refuge, to trust in the Lord, than it is to trust in man.
I'm so glad you brought that out. I think Jesus brings this point out as well, and the whole Bible is clear, and it's not really trying to hide the fact that humans are flawed. I mean, even the biggest biblical heroes commit some really heinous or despicable things sometimes. And I think the fact that the Bible doesn't gloss over those things or try to build up more than realistically possible the heroes, but rather points out their flaws, it's another reason why, to me, understanding more about God through the Bible is so refreshing. And Jesus, in reference to the Pharisees, right, the religious leaders of the time, first century Judaism, he tells the disciples, you must be careful to do everything they tell you, but do not do what they do, for they do not practice what they preach. Right? This idea that, yes, the message of Christianity, and I guess they didn't have Christianity at that point, but the message of the Hebrew religion was good and positive. It's like, yes, practice that, but people are going to let you down. And then finally, Isaiah 49:15 talks about how, hey, can a mom forget the baby that she's breastfeeding and not have compassion on the one she gave birth to? Though she may forget, I will not forget you, says the Lord. So people in your life may fail you, and the Bible expects that in some level, but it says, hey, God will not. And I think,
yes, and
go ahead. It's important. We see that in The Last Jedi too.
Oh no, definitely. And going back to something you said, that the Bible does not, you know, portray its characters and most righteous characters as being perfect. It also portrays that they had a lot of flaws. And that reminds me of something that happens in one of my favorite scenes in The Last Jedi, which is the part where Yoda comes and visits Luke when he burns down the Jedi Temple. And he says that, you know, you pass on your knowledge, you pass on your skills, but you should also pass on your failure. Because that failure is the best teacher. And I think that is also true in the way that we also teach the Bible that we portray Christianity to other people. We should not portray ourselves or anybody else as perfect, who is a human being, but we are to acknowledge each other's flaws if we are to grow together.
Oh man, you brought that up, and I'm so glad. I've been listening to Brené Brown recently, again, this researcher and speaker and author, and she talks about how vulnerability is courage. Not just that it's courageous to be vulnerable, but like the root of courage is vulnerability. Mm-hmm. And I think if we are to pass on, you know, the theological ideas of Christianity faithfully to a new generation, we have to be courageous and vulnerable and present the failings as well as the successes, right? And so I think in order to be a true Christian, we have to be honest about who we are, definitely, failures and all, and just say, hey, we need grace, just like the next person does. I messed up, you messed up. Let's all come to God together, and he's the one who is perfect and covers us.
Yeah, definitely. You got anything else to say about Last Jedi?
Yeah, something I want to say about Last Jedi is I sense a big emphasis there on more of, there needs to be a balance of light and dark in the universe. And so where I think it goes along with what we've been saying, instead of lifting up the light very, very high with the Jedi Order, hey, there's some darkness there, right? You have Luke, who thought about killing one of his apprentices. You have Rey, who in her training goes down to this dark place. And like, that's the first thing she does, right? Like Luke says, you went to the dark, like right away. Like you were drawn by that. You have Kylo Ren, Ben Solo before that, who was also drawn by the darkness, right? So there's this balance and this idea of light and dark needing to be together. You have the Force dyad between Kylo and Rey, which kind of represent the light and the dark side. You also have, when you look at the markings in the Jedi temple there, there's like almost like a yin yang kind of image, right? Where it's like the light, the white on one side and the black on the other. There's, you know, you have the Canto Bight sequence. It's something that was positive that I took out of all that, which was a mess, was the fact that here this codebreaker said, hey, good guys, bad guys, it's all the same. They're all feeding the same thing, you know? Like, oh, the owner of the ship, he sold weapons to the bad guys and, oh, the good guys, right? So it's almost like there's a balance. And going a little bit further with that idea, that success in the world is not about being good or about being bad, but about feeding this war, right? This, in this case, the wars, the Star Wars. But even in our world today, the people who have the most success feed this idea that you need to have power, and usually through violence. And that's how you gain, I guess, notoriety in this world. And it's interesting, the Last Jedi kind of brought that point about with this idea of, hey, good and bad, it's kind of two sides of the same coin. You need both of them.
Interesting. I think that's a dichotomy, I think, between Superman and Batman, where Superman is absolute good, where, you know, he's, everything he does has to be morally upright, and he's, even though he's all powerful, he's all good as well. But you look at something like Batman, who's gray. He's like, he's, yeah, like, he's really shady. He's violent, but he still gets work done. So I think, actually, you mentioned this before, that Rey in The Last Jedi is clothed not in the typical white and brown of the Jedi, but she's a little bit more gray. Mm-hmm. And I think that also reflects her state of morality, I guess.
Yeah. And in The Rise of Skywalker, she goes back to the white, if you notice.
Oh, no, definitely. And I think that part of that is because there was such a backlash against The Last Jedi that J.J. Abrams is like, okay, let's bring everything back to what you guys liked.
Let's ignore Last Jedi and let's try to go back to Force Awakens.
Somehow. Exactly. You can see actually how they retconned a lot of things from Last Jedi. But now that we're on the topic, let's talk about The Rise of Skywalker.
Let's. Go ahead. You start with a theme there.
Okay, great. So from the first... line of the crawl at the beginning of the movie says, "The dead speak."
Yes.
And right, when you read that on the screen of a Star Wars movie, you know you're in trouble. You know that all subtlety has been lost.
They're digging at the bottom of the barrel right
basically,
now.
And then basically in the crawl, we don't even see this happen. This wasn't even a mystery or anything. It's like, oh wait, Palpatine is back.
Out of nowhere,
exactly. And so the first scene is like Kylo Ren like mowing through, I don't know, through soldiers, and he comes to this, the Sith planet, and he's walking towards Palpatine, and you hear Palpatine's like, I am every voice you have ever heard inside your head. And it's in the voice of Snoke and the voice of Darth Vader. And this started for me, this turned in my mind, this comparison between Palpatine and the devil. Whereas we, even from like the beginning, from episode 1 all the way through episode 9, we have seen so many different antagonists, whether it was a Trade Federation in episode 1, whether it was Darth Vader in the original trilogy, whether it's Kylo Ren now or Snoke, there's one puppet master behind each one of them, and that is Palpatine. Mm-hmm. In the same way that in our world, there are different faces of what we call evil, what we would call evil, whether it be, I don't know, Hitler's Germany, whether it be, I don't know, Stalin's communism, whether it be, you know, terrorism, whether it be slavery. We see so many different faces of evil, but behind all of that, there is one mastermind at work, and that is the devil, of course, who originated sin and feeds sin as well. So I saw that kind of parallel when I started watching Rise of Skywalker, and you can see it go throughout the movie. And I have something else to talk about, but first, before I go into that, what are your thoughts?
Man, great stuff, I think, right there. But in the same light of talking to the dead, now this kind of connects, because I saw a big theme in the movie is this whole idea of reviving. So where Last Jedi was like, kill the past, you know, or let go of the past, kill it if you have to. That's literally what Kylo Ren said. In this movie, they bring the past back, right? So you have Palpatine, who is literally like undead. He looks like a zombie for the whole movie, basically. And then you also have Rey trying to talk to the dead Jedi. She's like trying to focus and talk to them. You also just have this kind of like hanging over the whole movie that the dead are still somehow present. That's the sense that I got, right? They go to like the place where some Sith agent died, supposedly, and his stuff is still there, and they go visit his stuff because they try to, from him, glean understanding of how to find, you know, the Sith planet, and then they have more idea of like who Rey's parents are. So just like a lot of connection to the past and to people who are dead. And it made me think about something that has been present in, I guess, biblical literature since the beginning. And that is this idea that you won't die, right? Like, you can cheat death. And we see that with Lucifer in the Garden of Eden, the devil in the Garden of Eden, tempting Adam and Eve from the very get-go. Eve, when asked about, like, hey, didn't God say you couldn't, like, touch the tree or whatever? She's like, oh, yeah, he said the day that we eat of it, we will die. And Lucifer's like, oh, actually, you shall not surely die. You are not going to die. You're actually going to become like God if you bite into this apple, or, you know, not an apple, whatever fruit that was. And we see this idea that the dead, or cheating death, is very important. And so the Bible is very clear that after you die, you just go to the ground. But every seems like a lot, or maybe most, I can't say that I've studied every single one, but most pagan traditions have this idea that the dead somehow can communicate with us, or that you need to honor the dead. And it's different cultures too. You look at Asian cultures, you have this idea of honoring the dead. You have Mesoamerican cultures where it's just like, hey, you honor the dead. Like, it's very present where the dead have play an important role in religion and in theology. And the Bible does not have it that way. The Bible does not, you know, honor the dead in that way. As a matter of fact, just says, hey, the dead don't know anything. So to me, it's very interesting, this connection of death and cheating death, and at the same time, this agent that has been behind it all with the same idea and the same lie. So I don't know. What are your thoughts on
that? Actually, I think, like, I'm trying to think, like, what is Palpatine's overall goal in life? Like, from the beginning to the end, what is his goal? I think you could summarize, he wants to achieve eternal life.
Yeah, and that's kind of what got Anakin Skywalker in the original, in the prequels. He wanted to cheat death, and that's the biggest reason why he went to the dark side. He wanted to save Padme, even though he was the one who contributed to her death, ultimately. So can I just read a verse here, Isaiah chapter 8, verse 19 and 20. And so here, right, God is talking to his people through Isaiah, and it says, when they say to you, seek those who are mediums and wizards, who whisper and mutter and talk to the dead. Should not a people seek their God? Should they seek the dead on behalf of the living? To the law and to the testimony. If they do not speak according to this word, it is because there is no light in them. Interesting, he uses the word light also in the Bible. So right here, what I understand the Bible to say is, instead of seeking wisdom from those who are dead, kind of like Saul did when he was desperate, instead of going to God, he goes to seek out dead Samuel. Instead of seeking out the dead, seek out God and seek out his word. And that is supposed to be your truth. And that is supposed to be your light. Not where you go worship the dead. Anyway.
Yeah, and you can actually see that come to a head at the end, because it's ironically, it's the people from the light that actually have more communication with the dead. That I think the climax where Rey is seeing Palpatine just electrocute all the ships, which is very ridiculous. But you see, and then she calls out to the Jedi, and then you hear all the voices, I think, like from Obi-Wan. You actually hear Qui-Gon, you hear Anakin, all these people speaking to her, yeah, giving, like cheering her on. I looked at it from another angle, and in a spiritual sense, it kind of reminded me of a verse that is found in Hebrews 12, verse 1. It says, "Therefore, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, let us throw off everything that hinders..." Everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles, and let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us. So in Hebrews here, the author, who we're not totally 100% sure who's the author. The author is taking into in mind the Olympic races, where of course you would have racers running almost naked or completely naked, a marathon, and you would have, there would be in a stadium, and the people would be in the bleachers and taking their seats, and they would be cheering them on. And in this sense, it says here that the great cloud of witnesses, which is taken over from Hebrews 11, which is the heroes of the faith, it's as if these people, these heroes of the faith, Abraham, Moses, David, all these people are cheering us on while we are running our own race. And that kind of reminded, I was reminding of that text here, because at the end, it's like all these Jedi, these dead Jedi are kind of like cheering her on, giving her strength as well. So I took it kind of in the spiritual sense, not the literal sense. But yes, the dead speak. I think that's how you summarize the entire theme of the movie.
Yeah, the biggest thing I got.
Definitely.
From that. And that's a theme that you find all throughout Star Wars, though. I mean, again, with the Force Ghosts in every trilogy, you find this idea of, like, you can connect with the dead somehow, and they spur you on.
Definitely. In Episode 4, you could interpret the, the voice of Obi-Wan in Luke's head as kind of, like, his memory or, like, his conscience, I guess. But then it becomes very, very clear what they're trying to do when you see the Force ghost of Obi-Wan in Empire Strikes Back. So yeah. And also we have the resolution of some ongoing themes throughout the sequel trilogy, most especially the theme of pride, which we have talked about at length. We still see that carry over here, especially in The Last Jedi, where Snoke is in the throne room and he's going to kill Rey. But then he is so confident, he's so prideful that he doesn't see that Kylo Ren is going to kill him, in which he actually does. And then I found this really interesting. In Rise of Skywalker, there is this one general. There's this general from the First Order whose literal name is General Pride. So yes. I thought that was interesting and probably a not so subtle jab at the theme of the movie. So yeah, we see some of those themes carry over from the other movies as well. Something I forgot to mention about The Last Jedi, one of my favorite quotes from that movie is where I think Rose says to Finn that we're not going to win this war by fighting what we hate, but saving what we love. And I thought, would that apply to Christianity, where we don't fight fire with fire. We fight fire with good. We fight hate with love.
Listen, that point made me stop the movie this time around, watching it. Because I was like, that is such... I mean, just kind of tucked away. but such a powerful point in The Last Jedi. And I think it's very relevant for Christians, because many times we focus on the law of God, and we focus on the do nots, mm-hmm. right, of the Ten Commandments. But do not do this, do not do this, do not do that. In other words, it's a list of negative things that we have to avoid. But when you understand Jesus and his message, he flips the script, and instead of, when he's summarizing the Ten Commandments, instead of talking about the do nots, he focuses on the do's, right? Like, love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and love your neighbor as yourself. In other words, instead of worrying so much about the evil, mm-hmm. I guess focus on love, right? Focus on the good and bringing some light into the world. And that's when in John chapter 3, when Jesus is talking to Nicodemus, he says, the Son of Man did not come to condemn the world, but to save, you know, and he brought light in order to cast out the darkness. And that's what judgment exactly, is, yeah. Which is such an interesting, powerful idea. Judgment for God is not condemnation. It's bringing light to a dark spot, dark place, and saving.
Yes.
And to me, that's kind of what Rose is getting at, too.
And think about it. I think that carries over throughout the entire movie, because every time, you know, every time they try to fight, the First Order, it's like they just keep on losing. They keep the situation just keeps getting worse. But they're actually saved by actually nonviolence, because when Luke fights Kylo Ren at the end, he's actually not attacking him. He's just dodging his blows, and I just find that's a theme that is very consistent throughout the entire movie.
I wouldn't say there's no violence. You got, what is it, Admiral Holdo or whatever her name is? That she like light speeds into the First Order. But again, she's trying to save what she loves. It's the same idea. Rose is trying to save what she loves. Admiral Holdo is trying to save what she loves. Luke's trying to save what he loves. So I think it's very applicable. Mm-hmm.
Definitely.
Same thing with the strategy, the getaway strategy by Leia, is to save the resistance, not to, hey, don't go blindly into trying to fight and take on these ships. Let's just save the people that we love, and we'll fight another day.
Exactly, and I think that's something that applies to Christianity as well, where our mission is to save people, and that only happens when we look at people through the eyes of Christ. Because Christ saw people in the way that, you know, there's so many people that are filled with hate, we're filled with a sin, and I just want to save them all, and that's actually what he created the possibility for.
Jesus focuses on the redeeming qualities of a person, not on the condemnable
ones. Exactly.
And that is such a powerful, I think, idea to live by and look at people through.
Yes. People are more than their worst actions. Definitely. All right. So yeah, I think that concludes our analysis of the entire Star Wars saga. So right now, of course, we're still in quarantine because of the COVID-19 pandemic. So we're going to try to bring more episodes out. Guys, we had a long conversation about Star Wars for the last few weeks now. But now we want to hear your thoughts on Star Wars. Is there any themes we missed that you think are noticeable? Or do you disagree with our viewpoints on any of our themes? Let's create a healthy conversation, a healthy discussion. If you guys have any other points of view, we're very excited to see them. And you can find us where, Josias?
Yeah, so you can find us on Facebook at the handle Cinema Theology. You can also just email us if you still do emails like that, cinematheology@gmail.com. Also, we're on Twitter at Cinema Theo. So again, cinema is CINEMA. Theology is TheologY. It's all together. And for Twitter, just take out the logy part of theology. Cinema Theo.
Great. All right, guys. See you next time.